Welcome, everyone, to this Westphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is IBM Data Power Firmware Upgrades and Migration Between Hardware Generations. The presenters are James Barrett and PK Haijiji. James is a certified IBM Data Power System Administrator for Firmware Version 6. In his 3 years as a support engineer, he has assisted numerous customers with issues relating to firmware upgrades and migrations between hardware generations. PK is a Data Power Level 2 support engineer and a teammate of James. He has worked with many Data Power upgrades, migration, and license issues, as his role consists of both hardware and firmware customer issues. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to PK.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you very much. As mentioned, my name is PK. My name is Pajan, but my teammates and customers know me as PK. I'll be performing this presentation today with my teammate, James. And, Kathy, unless you have something, we can get started.
We get started, yep.
Sure. Can you go to slide 2, please? So as mentioned, we'll be covering firmware upgrade process as well as migration, and we'll get started with the firmware upgrade. And more specifically, we will start with upgrade considerations prior to actually performing the upgrade. Slide 3, please. Just a note, there are many hyperlinks throughout the course of this presentation. In case we jump over one or two, just know that anything in Carolina Blue is a hyperlink for if you'd like to access the links afterwards. So starting with preliminary considerations for upgrading a Data Power appliance. So one thing you want to know is where you can access and get the six packs for Data Power. This can be obtained through IBM 6 Central, and there's a link below that first bullet. Generally, or on average, there's about four six-pack cycles throughout a year, and we recommend that customers upgrade about twice a year. We understand that upgrading takes time to plan, prior to actually upgrading, and then looking out for potential issues. But we do recommend customers upgrade twice a year to apply critical updates. And we also recommend that if a post-base level fix pack is available for a specific major release, that customers upgrade to something that's post-base level. And I'll get into defining major releases shortly. Upgrades can be performed via the command line, which is the CLI, also the user interface, which is the web GUI, and the XML management interface. We have a techno at the bottom of the slide for the life cycle of supported firmware major releases. Slide 4, please. So you can access critical updates for all the major releases via that hyperlink below the first bullet. And IBM wants to protect our customers and only provide the best available code to our customers. So for that reason, there are some fix packs that have been removed from Fix Central. Slide 5, please. So another thing to consider before performing an upgrade on a Data Power appliance is taking a look at what may have been removed from one major release to another. And there's a tech note on that as well. Prior to upgrading to a production environment, you want to test whether it's in a staging or development environment. You want to test that firmware to make sure that it meets your requirements and to avoid any major issues once the firmware is upgraded to production. And you want to give yourself about 6 months prior to an end of support for a firmware release to address any potential issues. We have a couple links at the bottom here. One is the Knowledge Center, which is for product documentation, and there is a specific Knowledge Center, if you will, for each major release based on what's new for that major release and all that. And then the final link is for APAR fixes for major releases. Slide 6, please. So as I mentioned earlier, talking about major releases, so I'll get into exactly what that is. So all fix packs, all firmware is set up via four digits, and that the format of that is version.release.modification.fixpack. So we have an example here of version 7102. So the 710 represents the major release, and the 2 is the minor release or the fix pack. When you're upgrading between major releases, you'll want to do further testing, especially if you're upgrading into a production environment. And the reason for that is there have been new features and enhancements, from a prior release. As far as upgrading between fix packs, you won't have to worry about feature enhancements. It's usually a minimized amount of changes, as you know, in comparison to upgrading between major releases. Slide 7, please. So, how do you select your firmware image? So, there's a few things you'll want to look into. One is the machine type. What is the hardware of the machine type that you're looking to perform the upgrade on? Are there any additional licenses that do not come standard with the appliance? And, of course, you'll want to pick out your exact major and minor release firmware that you'll want to install. We have a link at the bottom here that will help you determine what which image is right for you based on the above bullets and criteria. If you go to slide 8, please, I have an example here. This is straight from Fix Central, as I mentioned earlier, is where you can get your firmware images. So the example here we have is a physical XI-52 appliance, and if you're looking to upgrade to version 7104 and you have an additional license of TIBCO, you'll see the second option there in red. That is what I would choose for that criteria. Slide 9, please. Okay, now let's get to things to consider, during the upgrade. We've gone through the preliminary pre-upgrade stuff. So when you are performing an upgrade, and these are best practices. You may get away with not doing some of these, but it's recommended to do these to minimize potential issues. You'll want someone who has remote access to the appliance so they can connect via serial. Physical access, but it might, remote access or physical serial access. And there's a tech note there for connecting via serial to data power appliances. On top of that, you'll want to remove the appliance from the cluster, and you'll want to quiesce the appliance as well, and that'll help to minimize traffic. You're not going to want a lot of traffic going into the appliance during an upgrade. You'll want to save your configuration, any changes that have been made, and also take a backup of your configuration in case something goes wrong or you'll need the configuration later. So the proactive step, again, another best practice, is to take an error report so that we have something to look at in case IBM support needs to get involved with helping with an issue that happens during or post-upgrade. And you also want to perform a shutdown reboot of the appliance to help clear temp space on the appliance. 10, please. And also the last slide in this slide, bunch of steps to remember, as I mentioned, mainly best practices, not required, but we do recommend them. And they might not necessarily be in order as far as, you know, the steps to do. You want to make sure that, you know, after the reboot has been performed, that all data power services are working and functioning correctly. You'll want to grab the firmware image from ThickCentral, as I mentioned, and you can then go ahead and boot the image. And just make sure before resuming traffic that that the upgrade is, in fact, complete. So if you're in the web GUI, if you perform the upgrade via the web GUI, you know, don't go ahead and, you know, go to other services or try to resume what you were doing. If you're in the CLI, don't enter any other commands until it's complete. Slide 11, please. I'm going to hand it over to Jim now to go over the downgrade process.
Thank you, PK. So in the next series of slides, I'll go over the process to downgrade your appliance and the two primary methods of rolling back the appliance firmware image and reinitializing the appliance. Slide 12, please. So it's safe to downgrade between two fix packs on the same major release using the firmware upgrade process. For example, if you're on firmware version 7.0.5 and you want to go back down to 7.0.2, you could use the upgrade process that PK just walked you through to do this downgrade. For use cases different than this, for example, needing to go back to an older major release, the other options are to roll back to a previous firmware image, which is, of course, limited based on what the previous image you upgraded from was, and reinitializing the appliance to factory settings and installing the appliance fresh. This would require you to migrate any configuration into this version that you've reinitialized to. I'll go into this in more detail in the next few slides. Slide 13, please. So with rollback, this can be taken after an appliance has been upgraded before. Basically, the way it works is there's two separate partitions for the firmware images. So it can be very helpful in case you made a firmware upgrade and run into some unexpected issue. You can roll back to your previous config and restore to that state. In the slides, I have an example of a user upgrading from 6.0.14 to 6.0.1.10. If once the user upgrades to 6.0.1.10, that has its own partition, and it can roll back to the 6.0.14. And when you're on 6.0.14, you could roll back again to 6.0.1.10. I mean, any other intermediate firmware versions, you wouldn't be able to roll back to. So I think it's important to illustrate how this works to explain an example. So, for example, after you upgrade to 6.0.1.10, if you change the password for a user account, this change wouldn't continue after you roll back the image. When you go back to 6.0.14, then the password would no longer be in. The password would be the old password and not the new password. An additional thing to note that's documented in the additional info slides at the end of the presentation is that when you do an upgrade, the file system timestamp dates update to the day you did the upgrade. And when you roll back, the timestamp dates will show what they were before. Slide 14, please. So running the rollback, you can do it from the command line using the boot switch command. In order to issue this command, you need to be in configuration and global configuration modes. Global configuration and flash configuration modes, which an example is illustrated there. There's also a hyperlink for the command line interface documentation in our Knowledge Center for further reference. Additionally, from the web GUI, this is possible by clicking the system control panel on the web GUI, and then on the next screen in system control, there's a radio button that you can see in the bottom right that says firmware rollback, which will perform the rollback. Slide 15, please. So, as we were mentioning, with rollback, it's limited to the upgrade path. So, if you were doing a multi-step upgrade from perhaps 601 to 710, in this use case, if you had an issue when you got to 710, your rollback wouldn't be able to go back to 601, as that's not a supported upgrade path. So in that case, you want to restore your config using some other means and reinitialize to the 601 firmware image. So during reinitialization, all configuration is wiped, meaning that all data on the appliance are stored to factory settings and no data will persist. Because of this, you should have someone with serial access to the appliance for doing the network configuration of the appliance, as you won't be able to access that entering any IP address. You'll also want to, during the process, you'll specify the firmware image that you're going to install. This will be uploaded to the image directory. Slide 16, please. So in this slide, I have an example of running the reinit command from the command line interface. Again, you want to be in flash configuration mode, which is an option from global configuration mode. And with the reinit command, you specify a parameter of the firmware image you wish to install. This firmware image will be stored in the image directory on your appliance. And will be downloaded using the same process that PK discussed earlier with Fix Central. Slide 17, please. So once you begin the reinit process, you'll be given a setup screen in the command line, and the first prompt you may see will say press any key. What this really means is to press enter, and if you press any key, you may not get the desired results. After you've pressed enter, you'll be prompted to follow a startup wizard. Some points to note is that when you're following the startup wizard, by default it will prompt you to configure every interface on the appliance. We recommend that you only configure the interfaces you intend to use, as you can always go back and change them later, and this will help potentially avoid issues with the strict enforcement and network configuration feature that was included in the 7.0 firmware. Additionally, it's a best practice to bind the management interfaces to a specific IP address and port when setting them up. So, for example, when you're setting up the SSH interface, we recommend that you bind it to a certain IP and segment your network, so only users in your intranet or who need to be able to access the SSH interface it's exposed to. Additionally, we recommend that you initialize the RAID if it's included in your appliance, as it's an assumed prerequisite when you're performing a secure restore on the appliance. After you've completed the wizard, you'll need to accept the license from the web GUI to complete the setup. Slide 18, please. So when you're doing the reinitialization, this is also the time that you need to consider setting up various modes on the appliance. Two modes that can only be set up during this time are Common Criteria Mode and Disaster Recovery Mode. Common Criteria Modes required for customers that need to be in PCI compliance, and it will help them meet EAL4 certification. It's not generally recommended for most customers unless they have this requirement. Second, Disaster Recovery Mode enables secure backup on the appliance. It can be a valuable asset during appliance migration, and it includes private data such as keys and certificates, and also and also user data, all of which is not included in a regular backup on the appliance. Slide 19, please. I'll now hand it over to PK to discuss some of the considerations with virtual appliances.
Thanks, Jim. So next we'll get into virtual data power appliances. Slide 20, please. So virtual appliances are exactly what the name indicates. There is no physical component to it. There is a set of minimum requirements for all virtual data power appliances, and you'll see the hyperlink there for the Knowledge Center. That will highlight the two virtual CPU and the 4 gigabytes of RAM. We suggest, carefully considering using more than that. Generally, two virtual CPU and 4 gigs of RAM are not enough to suffice for data power services for resources within a specific environment. The recommended default is actually 8 virtual CPU and 8 gigs of RAM. It might vary based on your specific environment, but we do recommend strongly considering using the 8 and 8 combination. Slide 21, please. So if you're looking to upgrade a virtual appliance to major release 6.0 or later, so 6.01, 7.0, et cetera, you'll need to be running at least 5.0.0.8. So we don't recommend customers run version 5, as version 5 is now out of support. But in case you are looking to upgrade to V6 or 6.01 or any of those, and you are on version 5, just keep in mind that you'll have to be on at least 5.0.8 to do so. If you run into an issue with temporary space, uploading either the V7.0, 7.10, or 7.20 images on a virtual data power appliance, that issue can be addressed by IBM support. So you're recommended to contact IBM support for that. And also one more note, if you're running a load test on a physical appliance and you'd like to run that same load test on a virtual appliance, just keep in mind that it's probably not a great idea. And the reason being that the memory storage between a physical and a virtual appliance is not comparable, so it's probably not a great comparison to try to do that. Slide 22, please. I'll hand it back over to Jim to go over how to troubleshoot failed upgrade attempts.
Thanks, PK. So in this next series of slides, we'll go over troubleshooting failed upgrade attempts and some of the common known behaviors that have caused some of our customers issues with upgrades recently. Slide 23, please. So the first step when you have a upgrade that fails is to check if there are any error messages and to review the resolutions to common problems section in our firmware upgrade knowledge collection. In the second bullet point on the slides, there's a sample error message. From review of the tech note, you would see a message about error extracting firmware parsing error, and the directions from the tech note are to download the image file again and perform a shutdown reboot, and then proceed with trying the upgrade again. This can help avoid some common pain points from reviewing this tech note. Slide 24, please. So as I was just mentioning, in general, if an upgrade fails, it's a best practice to perform a shutdown reboot. This will clear temp space on the appliance, and it will also clear any connections that may not have closed out properly. In general, if you do observe an error that doesn't match any of the error messages documented in our common problem sections, we recommend that you try to catch a screenshot of that error and also collect an error report from the appliance, preferably at debug level, and then proceed with trying the shutdown reboot and retrying the upgrade. If it's still unsuccessful, the next best step should be to open a PMR with support and provide the data that you collected. Slide 25, please. So after a user upgrades, on the web GUI, they can see that their upgrade was successful from looking at the left side of the web GUI. On the bottom screenshot there, you can see that the firmware says XI56005 in the course of an upgrade when you were doing it. You would expect to see this, say the new image you upgraded to know that your upgrade was successful. Also, after an upgrade, any expired certificates on the appliance will be deleted. It's important to understand that this can have some impact on the web GUI if the web GUI certificates have expired. And there's a tech note for troubleshooting this on the second bullet point on this slide. Slide 26, please. So along the same lines about the certificates expiring, many things on the appliance are cached on a reboot or at the time of configuration, which is usually at a reboot. So these include the key objects and certificate objects. If the actual key that's referenced by the key object is deleted by mistake, it may not be immediately noticed until that object's enabled and disabled. So in these type of cases, it's possible that a user might not identify the issue until after they have done an upgrade and then correlate that with an upgrade. Slide 27, please. So as a result, if the key or certificate referenced by object is expired, it can cause services to fail. As a recommendation to potentially avoid these type of issues, we recommend customers use the certificate monitor feature to track expired certificates on the appliance. And also we recommend that before you upgrade that you should reboot the box and test to make sure all services are still working. This will help separate the cause of the issue being from certificates being expired versus from the firmware upgrade. Slide 28, please. So in the version 7.0 firmware version, there were numerous changes in networking, including the addition of link aggregation. Along with this change came some removed features and changes to the default settings. In the next couple of slides, we'll try to discuss some of the known behaviors that we've seen cause issues in the past for customers. So the first bullet point here is the strict enforcement of valid network configuration in version 7. This is a new setting on the appliance, and it makes sure that you have a valid configuration or it blocks any non-management traffic. So for example, if you have data power connecting to a backend, this traffic would be blocked until this configuration is modified. It's possible to turn off this property, and the tech note linked above has further detail on doing so, but it's important to note that you'll continue to see a banner in the web GUI and the CLI just reminding you that something doesn't look right according to those parameters. So one thing to keep in mind, as was mentioned earlier in the setup, is to be careful with only setting up what you need. So if you set up an IPv6 default gateway on an interface, but that interface doesn't have an IPv6 IP address, then the user can potentially hit the strict enforcement and production traffic be blocked until they modify their config. Slide 29, please. Another change that was made is the default metric for default gateways on the interfaces have had the metric change from 0 to 200. This can affect some users that are using complex routing configurations in their environment. The tech note has further information on this. Additionally, there was a defect identified in the upgrade to 7.0 that the 1 gigabit Ethernet interfaces failed a link if they're configured with full duplex at a speed less than their 1 gigabit speed. So, for example, if the switch and data power were both configured at 100 megabit full duplex, then they would fail to go up. As a suggestion to work around this, we recommend users use auto-negotiate mode instead on both the switch and the appliance. Additionally, there's a FinAPAR for this that will be fixed in the future, as it was too major of a change to be included in a fix pack. If you have any issues with this, please contact IBM support. Slide 30, please. So, also along the same lines, recently there have been a lot of security vulnerabilities observed in the field related to numerous ciphers and SSL v3. As a result, there are some security fixes that created behavior changes in fix packs, such as disabling SSL v3 by default for the Poodle vulnerability. When you're implementing these workarounds or fixes, it's recommended to make sure you test thoroughly and ensure that the configuration is still working after the changes are made. For example, after disabling SSL v3, if you have backends that still need to be using clients or servers needing to use SSL v3, then the objects that are trying to use that will fail. Slide 31, please. All right, that concludes our section on firmware upgrades. So I'll now hand it over to PK to begin our section on migration.
Thanks, Jim. Slide 32, please. We'll get started with a quick background of exactly what migration is. Basically, migration is taking an appliance configuration and transferring it over to another appliance. There's various reasons why one may migrate. The most common, at least in the last maybe year or so, that I've seen has been end of support for hardware generation. We had 9235 appliances go out of support last year. We had a lot of customers migrate from 9235s to 7199s or 7198s, which is the fifth generation data power appliances. Customers may also migrate because they've purchased a new appliance or because IBM has replaced an appliance, for example, due to a hardware issue or something along those lines. The example I just provided, XI50 to XI52 appliance. So XI50 would be the 9235 appliance migrating over to the 7199 XI52 appliance due to the fact that XI50s are now out of support. Slide 33, please. So there's two main methods to perform a migration. The first is a combination of secure backup and secure restore. So along with the configuration on the appliance, there's also crypto data and user information that's transferred over. The second method is an export-import. Basically, an export-import is a copy and paste of the configuration. There's no crypto data, there's no private data or user info. It's just a configuration. Slide 34, please. So we'll get into the first method, which is a combination of secure backup and secure restore. Slide 35, please. So as I mentioned, secure backup is a migration method that not only transfers the appliance configuration, but also cryptographic data, which includes certificates and keys. Secure backup is something that can only be enabled during an appliance initialization or reinitialization. There's an example from the CLI below you'll see the secure backup command. And what we're backing up here is a certificate called MyCert, and we're doing so to an FTP site. And you'll see off and off at the end of that command. I'll explain in a couple slides what that is. But that's an example of performing secure backup from the command line. Slide 36, please. So, as I mentioned, secure backup can only be enabled during initialization or reinitialization. However, if the initialization was done a long time ago and you're unsure as to whether secure backup is enabled on the appliance, you can check via the web GUI under the system settings. And you can also check in the CLI, and you'll see the example again from the CLI. The show system command will provide an output that will notify you whether secure backup is enabled. In this case, you'll see it is, as the backup mode is secure. Slide 37, please. So there are a lot of best practices that we recommend customers follow when performing secure backup to avoid some major issues. Similar to performing an upgrade, you'll want to take the appliance out of cluster and quiesce the appliance. You'll want traffic to be minimized during a secure backup. So the example of secure backup from the CLI a few slides ago, there was an off and another off at the end of the command. So what that represented was RAID and iSCSI. These are two things that it's the best practice not to back up via secure backup. If you'd like to back them up, we recommend an alternative method. Reason being, the resource consumption is very high. So by default, these two are enabled, so you have to manually go through and disable them from being backed up while performing a secure backup if you do indeed choose to not back those up. You'll see the screenshot in the web GUI below. It's an example of us changing iSCSI and RAID to off as far as not backing them up while performing the secure backup. Slide 38, please. So as I mentioned, crypto data is something that's backed up via this method. You can generate this from the web GUI using crypto tools. Just the web GUI on the appliance. If you do generate these tools, you'll want to make sure to export the private key. And the top two bullets just list the supported formats and data power for private keys and certificates. Slide 39, please. So if you're performing the secure backup locally, you want to make sure ahead of time that there is enough storage available on the appliance. Conversely, if you're doing the backup remotely, you want to make sure that your network bandwidth is enough to handle that, because secure backup can take up a lot of resources. As you would with any other important files and data, you want to protect all the backup files. That includes the private key. You'll also want to keep the private key for later use, as it will be needed to perform the secure restore upon the secure backup being completed. Slide 40, please. So the example we provided was from a few slides ago from the CLI was done via FTP file transfer protocol. Via FTP site. You can also, as mentioned in the previous slide, perform secure backup locally or remotely. If there's a secure backup that was previously written in the same destination, that will be overwritten by the newest secure backup that's performed and written to that same destination. That way you won't have multiple of the same backup in the same location. You can use the validate option. secure restore validate, and that will ensure that you're not dealing with any corrupt files or data, and that will save you a hassle later on, because the sooner you find out if there's something corrupt, the sooner you can take action on it. As mentioned, you want to keep the private key, but you also want to keep the firmware image that you've installed, as you'll need that for secure restore later on. Slide 41, please. So again, the firmware image, the backup file, the private key, you'll want to keep those in a safe place. And one place that probably is not a safe place, that may seem like a safe place, is a local workstation, like a laptop. The reason for that is, if you have someone that took secure backup and they also have access to these files and then they leave the company, you know, that's an unenviable position, because now you don't have access to that data if that was the only place that it was stored. So keeping it on a server or FTP site might be a better option. Similar to performing an upgrade, you'll want someone who has serial access to the appliance. But in this case, the reason for that is to configure the network settings in case there are network interfaces that need to be configured. And one problem we've seen, I wouldn't say it's frequent, but it's certainly not rare with customers, is after secure restore is complete, they, you know, they're worried that they're locked out of the appliance and they can't log into the admin user. But in reality, the admin user is automatically changed back to admin after a secure restore is complete. So just keep that in mind. If you perform a secure restore and you can't get into the admin user, you know, you're not locked out. It's just changed back to admin momentarily until you change it back. Slide 42, please. So when you perform a secure restore, you're not going to want to perform it on an appliance that has an existing configuration. You'll want a clean appliance that's been reinitialized. You may run into some issues with the RAID during secure restore if the RAID has not been initialized. There's a tech note, that first hyperlink on the page, titled RAID Configured, that has the steps and instructions to configure the RAID within Data Power. And in case you do run into issues, we have a DW answers post at the bottom of this slide as far as RAID issues with secure backup and the best practices associated with that. Slide 43, please. At this point, we'll get into cross-platform migration, then I'll hand it back over to Jim.
Thank you, PK. So the next part we'll cover is migrating across different appliance types. Slide 44, please. So with secure backup and restore, you cannot do this from a virtual appliance to a physical appliance or from a physical appliance to a virtual appliance presently. With our newest appliance type, the IDG, model 8436, it can have configuration secure restored from any of the 9005 series models and other IDGs. I think it's important to note that the IDG shipped with the 7.1.0 firmware version, so to secure restore to it, you'll need to have taken a secure backup on one of these appliances on that version or newer. Additionally, when you're doing a secure backup and restore across appliances, you need to specify the appliance model during the secure restore. I'll get to an example on this in the next slide. Slide 45, please. So in the top screenshot, you can see the secure restore screen from the web GUI, and there you see the crypto credential, which is the private key for the public certificate you use to sign the secure backup. There's source, which is the directory that you have the secure backup stored in on the appliance. Then there's an option to choose whether or not you want to validate the backup in validation can be helpful for determining if the backup is valid, so you don't run into issues later when you need to restore and find out that you didn't have a valid backup. PK mentioned this earlier. And then here, the final form that has the arrow next to it is the appliance model. If you click the boldface word on the web GUI, it will open up our online help, and it will show you a table that lists the different appliance models for the different appliance types. And then you can use that table to find the appropriate appliance model to put in this field. You don't need to do this if you're doing a secure restore from the same appliance, for example, an XI-52 to an XI-52. But if you're going from, for example, an XI-52 to an IDG, you're going to need to list the appliance model for the XI-52 in this case. Additionally, if the table missed something, you can use the show version, or if you just don't use the web GUI, you can use the show version command in the CLI on the appliance that you took the secure backup from to find what the appropriate appliance model is to list in this field. Slide 46, please. So finally, we're going to cover export and import, which is the other method of migrating appliances. Slide 47, please. So with export and import, you can export service configurations from a virtual appliance to a physical appliance and vice versa. When you take an export, it only includes the service configuration and network configuration. It won't include any private data such as keys and certificates, and it doesn't include users. You'll need to restore the private data using alternate methods or creating new ones. And as far as users, your system admin will have to assist with creating the users, the required users on the new appliance. It's not supported to import configurations from a newer major release to an older version. The reason for this is in newer major releases, features are added, and some of the feature change may be non-existent or incompatible with the older versions. And finally, in the bottom of the slide, I have an example illustrating that you can click the export configuration panel on the web GUI to get to the screen for exporting your config. And then after you've clicked that, you'll see a menu similar to what's on the right with options to copy or move your configuration files from one domain to another, creating a backup of an entire domain, backing up the entire system, and exporting specific configuration objects. I think it should also be noted that when you take a backup of an entire system, in general, it's not a good idea to import the default domain to the appliance. This is because it will import the network config from the previous appliance and could make the appliance inaccessible. So if you do that, then we would recommend having serial access to modify this config after importing. Slide 48, please. So to summarize, for the firmware upgrade, allows users to install our latest fixes and improvements of code and new features. Users should make sure to install critical updates and fixes on a frequent basis to avoid known issues and vulnerabilities that can have a high impact on their business. And they should follow the procedure for upgrade and best practices to limit issues and have sufficient data to troubleshoot if an issue does occur. Slide 49, please. To summarize the migration, customers can migrate across platforms using secure backup and export-import. As was mentioned, secure backup is not a good method for migrating between virtual and physical appliances, and for that purpose, export and import is the only approach. We recommend that you keep the firmware image, the private key, public cert, and backup image in a safe place. You'll need these all when you're completing a secure store, and this will also and this is all sensitive info, so you want to keep it safe. And finally, when you're using export and import for migration, you should be prepared to generate new private keys and certificates or have an alternate location to restore them from, as they're not included in the export and import. In slides 50 and 51, we have additional resources for your customers interested. And I'll hand it back over to Kathy.
James and PK, I went through the chat. Is there a question in there from a customer?
I think Mahmood had one question regarding our slides when we suggested removing from cluster. He had a question in the chat asking how to remove from cluster. And I had answered in the chat that removing from cluster refers to if you have a load balancer group, load balancing data power. Basically, what it's stating is you should remove data power from the load balancing at the time you're doing the upgrade or migration task.
At this time, since there are no more questions, we will conclude this presentation. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, James and PK, for presenting.